Hi, welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. This is Bobby Baxter, the senior executive producer of the Dr. Pat Show, and I'm sitting in for Dr. Pat today. And this is part two of our special about the dog food or pet food crisis in America. And I have a very special guest with me tonight, and this is Scott Freeman from Nature's Logic Pet Food. And the motto of their company is "The Way Pet Food Should Be Made." And before I bring him on and welcome him to the show, I'd like to just express to everyone all of our heartfelt concerns for anybody who has a sick pet over this crisis. And I believe that this is the tip of the iceberg. As more things come out, we will become more and more educated, have a greater hands-on approach to how we care for our pets. And that is our purpose here at the Dr. Pat Show, to help bring enlightenment into this area. And before I introduce Scott, I just want to let you know that natureslogic.com is his website, and they offer a percentage of all of the proceeds that they make goes to Feed Them Right Institute, and that's the feedthemright.org Institute. And this is a person who personally answered my emails, answered every question I had, no matter how many questions I had. He hung in there with me and personally took his time and offered up lots of information. And Scott Freeman, I'd love to welcome you to our show. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. And say hello to everybody.
Hi, Bobby. Thanks so much for having me this afternoon on the program. I feel that it's a great honor to be with you and to talk to your guest, and I'm looking forward to the time with you.
Thank you. I remember when I first connected with you, we shared emails back and forth, and you were so responsive. And since then, I have found and connected with other people that know you by name, know you personally, and were very impressed with you, and was actually quite thrilled to know that we were having you on the show. The recall that's happening now is just growing and growing, and you have recently come from a conference of dog food manufacturers. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's an annual conference put on by actually many of the ingredient suppliers to the industry, and ingredient suppliers from all over the world, as well as packaging companies and equipment companies. And that's held in Chicago every year about this time.
And so pretty interesting, the timing of all of that now. And so what was the energy there, and what were the concerns? And tell us a little bit about what was coming out at the conference and kind of the flavor of everything that's happening there.
Right. Well, the course conference and the topics had already been pre-selected, a long time prior to the recall that began in March. And, of course, while we were at the conference, the first day, Monday, is when, all of a sudden we hear about additional recalls and not in any connection with wheat gluten, but this time a connection with a different type of added protein source to some pet foods, and that it's what's being called rice protein concentrate, and I'm sure it's also called rice gluten. So there was certainly mainly the talk at the show were between individuals. We actually saw people there from Menu Foods. We saw people there from Diamond, where some of this is happening, and I'm sure there were Natural Balance folks there as well, and everyone that's represented in the pet food industry were there, and those that have been unfortunately involved in having products recalled due to these adulterated ingredients.
When you were explaining to me, the number of products, the truckloads, and it was staggering, and now it's becoming greater than 60 million cans of dog and cat foods that have been recalled. And as you described it, as just truckload after truckload after truckload that is being recalled.
And, yes, and actually, right.
And the FDA is saying, the FDA is reporting that not all stores have pulled the contaminated food from their shelves. And that I was just floored by that, just floored by that. So consumers still may not be aware that, that they are putting their hands on, they're buying or feeding their animals contaminated food. And I find that kind of frightening, and the FDA is doing whatever they can. They're actually sending people out into the streets and into the stores to check, and they're getting a handle on that. But the question that I have for you, because from what I have learned, and this is a direct quote about Scott Freeman, that he has forgotten more about pet food and manufacturing of same than most people will ever know. And so I feel very confident that I'm in the right hands here with you. And so the, there's just lots of questions that people have. They've been directing them to us. And some of them are, what is a pet owner to do? At this point, who are we to trust? What are we to think? And where do we go to help? What, how do you respond to all of the panic that's out there?
Well, Bobby, I don't think it's not unlike a recall with human products. You know, as you can imagine, when there's a recall of spinach or Tylenol or natural juices, and those are just all a couple in the past few years, you know, with the literally tens of thousands of stores, you know, involved in recalls of products, you know, not everyone listens to 24-hour news like many of us do now today, and I'm sure that it's that, that with the pet food recall, it's not any different than with a human product being recalled, where some stores don't get the word, some stores, you know, just, you know, for one reason or another, don't get everything off the shelf expediently. But going back to your reference to how much product's being recalled, yes, I mean, this is a, I mean, America is big, Canada is big, and there are tens of thousands of stores affected, and all of this product is having to be taken off the shelves. They are having to return it to their wholesale distributors. The wholesale distributors having to bring it into their warehouses and then accounting for all of this product. And then it's I'm sure that it's been a monumental task for companies that have manufactured this product that are making good on it and giving credit back to these wholesale distributors are just scratching their head finding, you know, warehouse areas to put all this product. And then I'm sure the FDA is requiring a lot of it to be kept for further inspection, further testing before a way is found to dispose of this. I mean, it's going to be a major, major undertaking to find out what to do, to accumulate all this stuff and to find out what to do with it. But going back to your question about, you know, what is a pet owner to do, you know, I think, you know, there, of course, are choices. You know, we in our society have, we've become accustomed for, you know, things to be, you know, create these service companies to create not only meals for our dogs and cats, but also for ourselves. And we've become very dependent. And, of course, you know, many people, if they want, could at least provide some of their meals themselves to their pets. But if you look at what's being, that's what's involved in the recall, it has been limited to products that are made and include these very processed protein ingredients, i.e. rice gluten, wheat gluten, and these are commodity ingredients. Companies usually go out with specifications and receive bids from companies because, you know, it's not bought in 50-pound bags. It's bought in metric tons, you know, probably, you know, almost shiploads of it come over from our ship, you know, all over the world to different countries. And, you know, just the difference of a quarter cent a pound might make the difference in you know, a profit on selling a whole shipload of the product. So, you know, you know, and so the products, again, like I said, are being, it's just these gluten products, it seems, that have been adulterated, And there are many, many products out there that don't include, you know, wheat gluten and corn gluten and highly processed grain or vegetable ingredients. So I would, you know, encourage your customers, your clients, your listeners to look at products that are made with whole foods that don't have highly processed ingredients and go in that direction. And there are a lot of those available out there.
So why, we had this conversation before over the phone, why do products contain wheat gluten and now rice proteins? Why are they even put in the animal foods?
Well, mainly for a couple of reasons. You know, so the initial recall was to do with a product called Gravy and Cuts. And gluten can be used as a thickener to make this gravy type meal, and you know, it's just used just like you would use flour at home to make gravy. It thickens it. Wheat gluten will help thicken a liquid broth and make a gravy type ingredient for that's included with these chunks. So that's one particular reason that the product is used. The other reason would be to increase the protein in a food. You know, my company takes a different stance, a different direction. In our opinion, we're feeding carnivores, and they should be mainly getting protein from animal ingredients. So we don't, you know, none of our products have included these type of protein ingredients, and because we use the animal ingredients for the protein. But and it would be less expensive than using animal ingredients.
Right. And then to make matters worse, this is an unnecessary ingredient, and they're suspecting that China has actually intentionally adulterated this gluten to have higher levels of protein show up in the testing to make it appear to be more protein enriched. So not so accidentally. It's not that it was done out of poor maintenance or haphazard or sloppiness. It appears to be intentional. Is that your understanding as well?
Well, yes. I've been asked not to quote anyone, but it certainly appears that this could be the case, even though, you know, it has not been, you know, proven or anything. But, you know, when a company is trying to meet the, when a company is bidding to try to get a job or try to be able to sell
right.
their product, you know, though they have to meet certain specifications, you know, whether it's the building of a building or the building of a ship or the selling of an ingredient. And, you know, you would, you know, mostly a company that wants to buy gluten, they want it to be a certain protein and a certain moisture level, and there may be a few other specifications, but mainly protein and moisture. And, of course, they would want to have it tested for aflatoxins and things and other possible molds or rancidity or something. And so, you know, yes, it's very well that it could have been a poor quality, poor grade of gluten, and, you know, that possibly the provider of this, the person that had this ingredient, knew that they could add this synthetic protein, that it more than likely would never have, never be detected, never be suspected, and could blend it in at a small percentage to raise the protein up. Yes, it certainly could be the case, and I'm sure this is being looked at.
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah. And you and I talked about the global market, the global community, and the effect that has. And yes, that's true, and I don't see the nature of the beast changing. I think we're going to become more and more of a global community. But there is a lot of concern about contaminated food, even human food coming out of China. There's the list just goes on and on about the vegetables, seafoods, nuts, all kinds of foods coming out of China that has everything from salmonella to all kinds of toxins, and they're stopped at the border, yet only something like 3% maybe of all food is caught or inspected coming in the border, and it's just a substantial amount that is not checked. The majority, the overwhelming majority of foods is not caught, and yet the number that they're catching that is contaminated with either salmonella or other toxins or pesticides is just phenomenal, and we don't seem to have the ability to control or monitor the foods, let alone the pet food ingredients or the raw ingredients or the bulk ingredients, but even the human consumed foods are being stopped at the border and by the FDA, and they just don't have the manpower to sufficiently police or monitor all of this. And so I can imagine how overwhelmed all points of entry into this country must be. And so it's not surprising that we're experiencing this, and it could just as likely be a human-consumed food crisis as well, don't you feel?
Yes, I don't think the I don't think it's totally known yet whether any of this ingredient, we haven't heard yet on the rice gluten ingredient whether or not it possibly could have been a product sold in the human food chain. We don't know. I think it's still we still don't know that, and I think and many pet food companies are still testing their rice gluten, because as you saw in the recall on Monday or Tuesday, this rice gluten has been sold to 5 different pet food companies. So far, we've only heard of one reporting that
the interesting thing is that they're not even the suppliers aren't even naming the other pet food manufacturers, only the one, and so that's kind of disturbing as well.
I'm sure they told the. I'm sure the FDA knows that, and the FDA may have given them some type of guidance. If they have not, I'm sure all that's being tested, and that when it is tested, if it is found positive for melamine, I'm sure that it'll all go public. But they'd only known so far the single company had tested positive for melamine. So I'm sure the others will come out, Bobby.
Yes, I'm sure they are testing all of them. Let me ask you this, Scott. Do you feel, and I may be getting you into trouble here, do you feel that all of the pet food manufacturing companies were very forthright because this is, there's been more and more companies that are now joining the recall voluntarily over the course of time. Do you feel that it's possible that some of them were sort of sitting on their hands waiting? Or do you think everybody jumped into action?
Well, I think anybody involved with, I think as the FDA has worked with companies like Menu and the company that imported the wheat gluten, and now Wilbur Ellis that imported the rice gluten, I think very quickly those companies are handing over to government authorities all the records that they can account for where those ingredients went. And then the FDA goes. They immediately go to those other companies. And so I don't think a stone is going to go uncovered as far as these two adulterated ingredients that we are now aware of. And so, I don't think anyone can hide from this, because, you know, the records are there, and we know that Menu even had to, admit later that they did, because of some pets in Canada, becoming sick, and they had to go back and look at their records again and realize they did transfer some of that ingredient to one of their plants in Canada as well. And, they came out again forthright with that. I don't think they were trying to hide it. It's just a monumental task to go back over the millions of thousands of entries and millions of pounds of ingredients that they buy and transfer. It's a big task to do that. So I don't think if someone is hiding, I think sooner or later the FDA will come knocking on their doors, because they will know from Wilbur Ellis, Menu, and the other companies where this product went.
When you and I first started talking, no, it doesn't. And you and I first started talking, I had expressed to you a concern about Menu, because of all the emails that we were receiving, the outrage, this was as things first began to break, and we were saying part of the overwhelming sentiment from the public was somebody needs to pay, Menu needs to pay. And you and I talked about that, and you said, wait a minute, Bobby, I've been to the Menu facility. I'm aware of the protocols in which they use to manufacture, and it's higher than most other companies. Tell us a little bit about Menu, because there is that sense of pointing the finger at Menu, and you helped me understand that that's not the right place to be pointing the finger.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's any different than what we've seen with the tragedy at Virginia Tech when, you know, immediately people, you know, it's human nature. We want to beat up on the bad guy, you know, and we, out of our anger and our fear and our confusion and our frustration, you know, we want to nail somebody. And you know, what I tried to explain to you is, you know, I don't think this is a Menu problem or a Wilbur Ellis problem or a Diamond problem or, you know, any other manufacturer in the United States. This was the FDA has even said it, and I confirmed it with a number of scientists, nutritionists, and scientists at the pet food forum that I just attended. This is basically under any normal and even extra abnormal protocols and checking of ingredients and good manufacturing practices. This is something that would not be looked for. It wouldn't be found, even if you were doing good, normal checking of the products. And, it was only found after a time of doing a lot more type of testing than what would normally be done. And even one organization up in New York tested it and, you know, claimed it was rat poison, and they basically cannot reduplicate that test. And in other words, they can't duplicate it and find it again. So, that you know, even their findings initially apparently were wrong. And,
right, I read that as well.
Mm-hmm. And going on to the question about Menu, I mean, we've all heard now and learned now it's a Canadian company. They have I think at least three plants here in the United States and one in Ontario, the province of Ontario, and they're a publicly traded company. You know, my opinion of what I've seen of them is gone to their plant in Kansas, and I kind of liken it to going to a Compaq or Microsoft campus. It's a beautiful facility. Landscape beautifully, lakes of water beside it. You go inside the plant and it's the most modern facility and modern offices and layers and layers of accountability and protocol. And the reason large companies like Nutro and Science Diet and Eukanuba are there is because of the quality of the company and the quality of the manufacturing they're able to do. Because these people will open their doors and allow third-party inspections to come in, to ensure these big companies that their products are being made with the best equipment and the best efficiency and the best protocols. And like I'm saying, this is something that just snuck in undetected. No one would have suspected it, and it would be a very, very hard thing to ever find. In an ingredient any gluten protein product. So,
as I began to investigate all of this for this series, the perception that a lot of people have is that Menu itself went out and gathered all the ingredients and make up this dog food and then put it into different containers with different labels and sells it. But you helped me understand that there are commodity brokers involved. There are third parties involved. That it is so removed from the decisions makers at Menu or any other manufacturing or housing who produces this, and that we as Americans need to understand the process, and that's why you're here, is to help educate us as to the process. It's not like what I had originally suspected was Menu was trying to save a few cents, and so they went to offshore markets to buy these commodities, and they don't care what it is as long as they're saving some dollars. And you you put a face on the workers for me there, saying that there are people that go home to their families and feed their animals the same product. And it sounds like, from what you had mentioned to me before, that those people are just as devastated by what happened as we are, and they're taking the heat for it. However, obviously the finger has to get pointed somewhere to start with.
Right, and I understand all the reactions that we've seen, and I understand all of the consumers calling with concern to every manufacturer across the country, wanting to know if their food is made here, wanting to know if it has wheat gluten in it. I understand all of that. And, you know, and we try to not, you know, demonize a specific company, especially since we know them and they're a part of the industry and they're very reputable people. And yes, they are people just like you and me, Bobby. I mean, they go there, they work hard, they're proud of their company and their products. And yes, I know them personally, that this has been a huge, huge issue for them to deal with. And people are, you know, they're stricken that a product that they take so much care to make, you know, has made many dogs sick, many cats sick, and has actually taken the lives of some of them, and they're just devastated by it. And you know, as are the new companies that are being involved in recalls this week. You know, it's just a terrible,
right,
terrible tragedy. Mm-hmm.
Well, Scott, in your foods, you don't put these ingredients in your foods. You don't even use synthesized vitamins and minerals or ingredients. Why is that? Why do you hold to a higher standard?
Right. Well, it's just, I mean, to me, it's just common sense that, you know, if you use whole foods and whole food ingredients and derive all your nutrients from whole foods, you're alleviating literally dozens of ingredients that are further processed. In other words, the more processing you do of an ingredient, the more of the nutrients you use. Also, products that are very, very processed, they have more opportunities to be contaminated. You know, highly processed things have to have process aids put in them. Highly processed things lose a lot of their nutrients, and that's why you have to fortify back in with these chemically synthesized vitamins and minerals that are known to have contaminants in them, actually allowed to have a certain amount of contaminants in them. And we know that excessive amounts of certain synthetic vitamins can be toxic to mammals. And so, you know, by using our standard is to use whole foods, to use high animal content ingredients in our food, and therefore we're able to derive all the needed nutrients in pet food just from whole food. And so, I mean, it's just common sense that those ingredients would be safer because you don't have to add in as many as 26 chemically synthesized vitamins and minerals. We get plenty of protein in the food from the animal ingredients, so we don't have to add in additional things to bring the protein up. So it just makes for a safer food.
And you're concerned about the synthesized ones. Why is that?
Well, I mean, last year there were recalls of two recalls, one in February and one in March of last year, where animals actually got sick. Some died from companies' products that, I guess, accidentally put in too much synthetic vitamin D. Too much D can cause hypercalcemia and cause kidney failure. I don't remember exactly what these animals got sick and died from, or, you know, how it affected them physically, but I know that some died and some got sick. And then a number of years ago, the FDA did a report on a food that was recalled where some pets lost their lives and also many got sick. And basically what was, you know, what was possibly the culprit were elevated levels of added iron and copper, which can also be toxic at high levels. And so, you know, but all of those nutrients can be derived from safe, whole food. And that's just the way we decided to go. And, you know, and I think it's, you know, the feeding trials we've done and that we've passed, you know, have basically substantiated what we're doing. And we even, it was really a great thing for us at the Pet Food Forum just this past week on Tuesday, there was a gentleman that gave one of the sessions, and he basically said there's a growing evidence that, you know, feeding whole foods can provide a lot of benefits to animals above base nutrition. And he also talked about the synergism of the certain phytonutrients found in things like whole fruits and vegetables can actually provide a lot better nutrition than individual supplemental elements, i.e. Synthetic vitamins and minerals. And he basically confirmed it himself in this this hour session to, you know, pet food manufacturers there attending the session. So it was
good
for us to hear that.
How do you see the future of the pet food industry changing because of this, and where are we headed?
Well, it's funny that you asked that, and I don't know, and I think this was also planned even before this recall, that some of the different, there's been a new organization formed, and I don't know the acronym or the exact name of it, but it's basically being formed, and it's the gist of it is that it is a safety board. It is a board that will be made up of people that will create, you know, some help in directing and facilitating pet food manufacturers to create more safety protocols into their manufacturing, into their ingredient testing. So it's certainly a timely thing to be organizing and forming and see the beginning of it. So yes, I mean, Bobby, it will never be the same after this. There will be course testing for melamine, and I'm sure they'll actually add some additional. They're going to think outward now. What else could be added to these type of ingredients to increase protein? What else could be added to add other nutrients synthetically that might be toxic that we need to be looking for? So we're going to start thinking out of the box, I'm sure, and write some more protocols for these companies to. In other words, let me give you an example. You know, before I export some products over to the EU, you know, I have to get certification from an FDA veterinarian to sign off that there's no E. coli, it's been tested, there's no E. coli in it, and there's not this, and there's not that, and it's been produced under the EU regs and stuff like that. There's going to probably become, you know, certain ingredients imported in the United States, and even ingredients produced here and used in the pet food industry, there's going to be a sign-off, you know, list of things that are going to have to be tested and signed off by, you know, whoever it might be. I don't know who it might be, but you know, there's going to be more checks and balances, I'm sure, after this.
And more oversight. And I think that's a great thing. However, the FDA is already saying that they don't have the funds or the manpower to even check as much as they need to. And actually, with pet food, anybody can start a company, correct? And they don't have to have approval from the FDA until after they've actually produced some food. So there's no pre-approval process that happens. And I'm wondering even if that's the FDA's function, except for oversight and investigation. But the FDA just doesn't have the resources to control the situation.
Well, I think it's no different than the USDA. I mean, over human food, you know, they have some oversight at USDA production facilities, but you know, just you know, there's no way with the population of Western civilized countries to check every fruit, every vegetable, every slice of meat. I mean, Bobby, it's just be impossible. You know, you have to have a level of trust. You know, and so you have to have at least some guidelines, you know, that the FDA helps produced, that is gleaned from research that the National Research Council has done, that is from this new organization that's being formed to help create additional safety mechanisms for the pet food industry, you know, and then you have to have a level of trust. You know, it's just like people building houses or being a plumber or whatever. You know, it's just, you know, in this country, it's not everyone has to, you know, we're pretty independent in this country, you know, and I mean, there's some good things for that about that, and there's some bad things, but you know, we don't want a police state, and that's why people have choices though too. If you don't feel
right.
like a company, if a company does enough quality controls and they can't give you the guarantees that you feel makes you feel safe about using their foods, then don't use their foods. You know, and so I think again, we humans have to have some responsibility ourselves to make choices, and some people in the past have made choices just on price, you know, and that might come back to bite us every once in a while. And, you know, and things like these commodities are used in products in part to keep the price down. You make a product with Whole Foods like my company does, and you're not going to get a cheap product from us. Nothing about our products are cheap, but, you know, you get more of what you pay for, I feel. But so you know, some responsibility needs to be in the hands of each individual, you know, feeding their pets too, you know. But it doesn't take away the responsibility that a company has, and that's why we have laws. That's why we have courts, you know. And I'm sure justice will be served on the most part for what's happened. And you know, my hope is that companies like Menu and Wilbur Ellis and others that are going to get involved in litigation will also have some recourse back to those suppliers as well.
So. Right, and there's the fine line. There's the dance that we have to do, and as consumers, it's our job to become more savvy about this. But when we have a global community, even under the Bioterrorism Act of 2002, it states and mandates that anybody importing food into the United States is required to notify the FDA about the shipment before it arrives in our ports, land, air, or sea, and that allows the FDA to actually intercept any contaminated shipments or products before they reach the market or our manufacturers. However, in this case, if this proves to be intentionally adulterated, then are we opening ourselves up for all? Is this a Pandora's box, in a sense, of allowing imports without having enough manpower resources to really check, double check, police it? I mean, what are we to do? And this goes back to your situation where you don't really require those ingredients. Do you get most of yours from within this country?
Yes. But even some of the best natural food companies that produce food here in the United States, you know, our consumers create certain demands. And, you know, they want some exotic meats. They want venison. And you just can't get venison in this country. So most of it is imported from New Zealand. Customers want rabbit. You just can't get rabbit from this country enough to produce a sizable amount of product to make, you know, available nationwide. So there are sources in Italy, there are sources in France, there are sources in China for rabbit. You know, our company imports it from France, you know, because we choose to import it from, you know, a European Union country which really has strict protocols for the raising of their animals and the slaughter of them, and then the feeds that they feed them, etc. So we have to import sardine oil from Norway. We bring in our duck from Canada. There's for some of these more, you know, of course we can get plenty of chicken and beef in the United States, but when our customers are demanding some of these more exotic meats or poultry ingredients, we have to look outside the United States for some of those. But, whole fruits and vegetables, nuts, beef, for the most part lamb, and chicken, of course, can be sourced in the United States, but many of the other ones need to be sourced from overseas.
So is this a bigger problem, which could also have a greater impact on the human food consumption? Because even the lawmakers were saying that the Chinese have refused to grant visas to FDA inspectors, or actually they were sort of making it a little bit difficult for them to come and check on the growers. And then there's the whole problem with, in China, I'm just going to pick on them for a second, the way that they grow and manufacture based on their needs and their economy, there's less control, so they'll have smaller little farms, and there's less documentation. Smaller farms ship to larger ones, and so it's difficult to track and document, and all of those different little farms use different pesticides and chemicals, and there's just not, they don't have our version of FDA in those countries, and especially in China, it seems like, and now they're doing a little self-protecting thing happening here. So this, we can't obviously hold our pet food industry to a higher standard than our human food supply is. So where does the change have to happen? Because the FDA says they don't have the money to really do an adequate job.
Right. Well, I think what will happen in the case of what we've seen here, Bobby, is we just want, there won't be any more imports of those ingredients from China, and there are other options to use to make gravy and to raise protein in pet food. If the companies don't want to use animal protein ingredients, they can. There's plenty of corn gluten in this country. There's plenty of soybean in this country. There are other alternatives to the wheat gluten and rice gluten that has come in from China. So I'm sure that, if China's not going to open their doors like our American consumers have required the pet food manufacturers to open their doors and let us see in about how you're doing all this, if China doesn't do it, they're not going to get any more of the American consumers' dollars they're spending on pet food. You know, it's going to go, more to American and Canadian and European suppliers. It may go to South American suppliers. They grow a lot of, wheat and in that country. So it's going to go elsewhere. Those that will disclose, their practices and stuff. Because the American consumer won't put up with this, as we've all seen.
And look how we react when it's our four-legged or two-legged family members. If it's a human child, there would be such an outrage at multiple proportions to what it is now. And so what do people need to ask for? What does an American consumer, and who do they need to demand this from so that there will be positive change in this industry and then have that trickle down into the human food chain as well?
Well, I think they're already doing it, Bobby. I think the pet food industry had no intention of this happening, but it did, and I think it's been a wake-up call to everybody to step up the due diligence and to not take anything for granted. And I think all the action that needs to be taken has been taken. And, of course, this is going to go on with ripple effect for a long time. Weeks and months and maybe even years and courthouses and lots of other things going on. But I think this situation will get cleaned up here and get flushed out of the system. Companies will change, improve to better ingredients. Like I say, there's going to be extra protocols and tests instituted, to look out for stuff like this, now that we know it's a potential possibility that things like this can happen. And so, I think the ball's in motion already for big changes. Because everyone has a lot to lose if they lose the confidence of the American, consumer about commercial pet food. So, and
so what is,
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
What do the consumers need to ask the pet food companies? And that's the first part of this question. And the second part is, not every dog food company or cat food company out there has been as open and responsive as you have been. There's some that you can't even get a hold of the people. And quite frankly, I called Menu, and the only number that you can find is the number on their website, which is about the recall, and they have some contract employees just taking the calls. And the little gal was so nice and tried to be helpful, and she was trying to be very honest and say, even if I were to take that message, all I can do is give it to somebody who only handles the recall questions, and it's unlikely to get into the hands of anybody who would really be able to respond to you. And you look everywhere out there, and it's difficult to even find a phone number. It appears that the website's gone, the regular one, and there's just this one. So the same is true for some other pet food manufacturers, that they don't just answer the phone. And I'm sure that they're overwhelmed, but this is a way to build trust. And I have to commend you again, because you personally answered every – I could have gone on for 6 days with questions, and I believe you would have answered all of them. And just so the listeners know, you were on your way – you had just lost a family member. You were driving through the snow and gave me your cell phone number, and on the way, in the midst of your loss, you talked to me for over an hour. And that really says a lot to me. And there's other people that you can't even find a phone number for.
What do people need to ask? Well, I guess I could just say two things. First of all, thank you for your compliments. And I mean, that's just unfortunately, I guess, the type of person I am. But I want to tell you, there are multitudes of people in the pet food industry just like me. There are untold numbers of people in the industry that I'm involved in that will bend over backwards to do the same, you know, thing that I've done. Maybe they're hard to find sometimes because you just haven't connected with them, but there are a lot of them out there. And I guess what I would say to the consumers is find companies that will talk with you, that will be open, that will give you the assurance of any questions that they have, and give those companies your business. If a company doesn't want to talk, doesn't want to give you assurance of the questions and concerns you have, you know, then make the decision based on that. I would think that consumers, rather than me trying to come up with the top 10 questions you ought to ask them, I think consumers already want to know. They want to know, you know, does it include any of the contaminated ingredients? You know, are they getting ingredients, you know, offshore? If so, where do they come from? You know, but just I think you can make a judgment on a company, you know, by how they do handle their questions, how they do respond to the consumer's concerns and needs and frustrations and go from there. And, again, I reassure you and your listeners that the ball is rolling now, and things will only get better for consumers and the products they're going to be buying in the future from the store shelves. I can assure you of that, because you know the companies aren't taking this lightly, and it will make everybody step up a notch in the right direction. So I think that's a good thing for the industry.
And so, because you know the people at Menu so well, what are they implementing? What changes or new protocols are they considering to prevent this type of a thing from happening again? Because they just took such a big hit on this.
Well, you know, they have a large purchasing department, you can imagine, to purchase all the ingredients that are needed to make the huge quantities of food they make for some of the large customers. And I mean, they're just going to. I haven't spoke to them personally, you know, about everything here, but I can just assure you that they are going to look over things with a fine-tooth comb as far as testing and analyzing, you know, for probably dozens of more potential toxins in any main ingredient that they have that's on a processed nature like rice gluten or wheat gluten or things like that. And they have the analytical ability to do that. You know, I've seen some of their laboratories, and they have fabulous facilities, and they have good people and knowledgeable people. And I say this is just like a Trojan horse. It's just not something that would have ever been expected. And
oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But people don't know what questions to ask, and that's where you were so helpful to me, is what do I even ask my dog food or cat food company, and how am I to know where to begin? Because we don't even know what we don't know. There's so much that we don't know as consumers about this industry. We don't know what kind of questions to ask, and hopefully some of that's been answered tonight. But where can people go to get more information so that they can become a little bit more educated, not expecting to get degrees in this, obviously, or to spend years doing it? But even on your website, you have, and you mentioned to me about the new vitamin Bible by Earl Mindell, and where else can people go to find some real information, not just spun up information, so that they can become more educated?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I really don't know if it would help or whether the typical consumer would really want to be bothered by reading some of this stuff, but, you know, the National Research Council puts out books on, you know, studies and books on dog and cat nutrition. I mean, that's basically the Bible of the industry that AFCO looks towards, that FDA looks towards. And then AFCO has their annual publication that gives hundreds and hundreds of definitions on ingredients. It gives the protocol for an AFCO feeding trial in there if a consumer would really like to know more about how feeding trials are conducted. It has the what's called the nutrient profile that companies have to formulate their dog and cat foods by. If a consumer really wants to know what level of certain nutrients that companies have to build into their formulations, anybody, if they wanted to, could, you know, the American Holistic Veterinary Organization, they put on an annual conference, and anyone can sign up to go to seminars there. There's pet food industry organizations that the public can come to some of their forums, and you know, possibly, and I don't know, you know, I might touch base with you later and give you some of these organizations that have annual, biannual meetings that the public can come to some of those forums if they want to get more educated. But, you know, just as far as a book, you know, or something like that that they can go to Amazon.com and buy, you know, I really don't have one. I mean, there are a lot of good books out there on nutrition, on doing some things at home for your own pets, like, you know, Pit Karen's book on natural healing for dogs and cats. There are just a number of books out there that give helpful information on nutrition, that talk about different ingredients maybe to stay away from, certain ingredients to look for in your pet foods. But, you know, if a person's inquisitive, I think they'll get out there and find some of those. But as far as just being one, yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
If you will send me some information, we will post it on our website and be a source of information, and because our desire is to be that conduit and connect people with powerful information. So what's the difference between table scraps and what you're suggesting? Because a lot of people, historically, we fed our animals table scraps. Why? What's lacking in nutrition for that, for our animals, by doing that?
Well, I think most people's concern, you know, if it's just the table scraps, that could be too high in carbohydrates, too high in fats, you know. But if, you know, if someone really wanted to feed on their own, they need to make sure that they feed a variety and that they make sure they add enough enough animal protein ingredients, meat or poultry and some fish and stuff like that. Whereas, you know, most table scraps are going to be leftover, you know, bread, green beans, some gravy, you know, bacon drippings, you know, just not enough
right.
protein there. And you know, most pet foods, raw frozens that are developed, the dry foods and canned foods that are developed are should be high in animal protein, very few carbs, some concentrates of fruit and veggies, and, you know, to give a balance. And then also offer a variety of those products from different meat sources, things like that. You know, it certainly doesn't hurt, you know, to add to your commercial diet some good human leftovers. I'm not talking about just, you know, bad stuff, you know, a lot of fat, a lot of carbs. But if there are some good leftover fruits, veggies, some good lean meat stuff left over, it wouldn't be a bad idea to feed a little bit just to give some variety to the diet. I don't have a problem with that at all.
Well, Scott, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule and your daughter's recital and speaking with our listeners tonight. And your company is Nature's Logic, and people can go to the drpatshow.com. You'll have a link under your profile so people can get a hold of you and find out more about your company and your rigid standards for producing food. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for being so willing to talk with us this evening and for all your wonderful information, and hope to have you back.
Well, I'm very fortunate to have been your guest, Bobby. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And this is Bobby Baxter for the Dr. Pat Show, and we'll see you again next week. Thanks for joining us.